The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, today we've got Mark Walker with us. Mark is the founder of Luxmana Investments, which focuses on residential and multifamily investments. Mark was able to go from being a part-time investor with a full-time job in high tech, which we've talked about a lot on this show, making that transition, to someone who quit the corporate rat race in pursuit of his passion and now thrives as a multifamily investor. So we're really looking forward to this and want to welcome you to the Old Dogs Network, Mark.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, this is really great. This is you have a lot of experience and background that I think is going to be of value to our listeners. And I just wanted to find out, first off, what were you doing before you went into real estate full-time, and how did you make that transition?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I started out with a career in high tech. I worked for a company that designed, manufactured, and sold hard disk drives. So, in fact, your computer or your laptop, your consumer device, maybe even a server that you might use, probably had that company's hard disk drive in it.
Wow.
And I was fresh out of college. I started working for them in 2001. Had a great career. Loved the people that I worked with. But, you know, in about 2003, I read a book that changed my life. I'm sure it's you hear it a lot. Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
You bet. Same here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really kind of turned a light bulb on for me, turned me on to real estate. But at the same time, it really rekindled the fire that I've always kind of had inside myself to be an entrepreneur. It was in 2004 that I bought my very first rental property. It was a duplex in South Denver. And I did this while I was still working my full-time job. And I owned that property for about a year or two. And, you know, what was really exciting about that very first deal was it had a 36.5% cash-on-cash return in the first year.
Amazing.
It was amazing. And when that's your first deal, I'll tell you, it just lights a fire underneath you, you know? And so After owning that property for a year or two, I sold it with the full intention of 1031 exchanging into something else, you know, for multiple reasons, which we can probably revisit here in a few minutes. You know, I decided to sit the next few years out. And that was probably a blessing in disguise because we all know what happened to the market in the 2008-2009 timeframe. Then it was in 2010 that I started networking again and wanted to get back into the real estate game. I met a general contractor in Denver, Colorado, and we decided to partner on a couple development deals together. We scraped a couple single-family homes down to the ground in trendy parts of Denver that was getting a lot of investment from other investors at the time. And in place, we raised up a three-story duplex on each of the lots. And we did what's called a party well agreement, which allowed us to deed each side of that duplex off separately and sell each one.
Wow, just and, like a town, like almost like a townhouse type thing or a townhome. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, in 2011, the first one was done and the money started coming out from those. And that's when I, you know, decided, you know, I really what I want to do long term is I want to invest for passive income. You know, I wanted to have rental properties or mailbox money. And so that was in 2011 that I started buying rental properties then. And
Were you still working full time at this time?
I was. Yeah, okay, absolutely. Gotcha. So I was doing all this kind of stuff on the side. I acquired quite a few properties between 2011 and 2014 here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we hear in the news right now that Colorado's real estate market is incredibly hot. It's very much a seller's market right now. But back in 2011, you know, through 2014, there was a lot of inventory on the market and, you know, the deals were aplenty. And so, you know, I recognized that and, you know, bought a whole bunch of single family residences and rented those things out. And then it was in 2013, towards the end of that year, that I bought my first apartment complex. It was a 12 unit apartment. And then it was in January of 2015 that I had enough passive income to escape the rat race. And I decided to do that. And later on that same year, even though I didn't have a job, I was able to buy a 64-unit apartment complex.
Wow. Year was that, the 64?
That was tail end of 2015. It was in December of 2015 that I did that transaction. And I spent a good amount of 2016 renovating that property and turning all the leases, doing what we call repositioning the property, you know, resetting the income levels and the, you know, the P&L and all that stuff. And now that property's stabilized and, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I'd love to find another one and do another one sometime here in 2017.
Now, did you purchase that on your own or did you have partners or investors?
Everything that I bought, you know, in my Luxmana portfolio was 100% my own money. When I did the 64 unit, I did partner with two other guys that came in on that. And, you know, I own 35% of that deal and I'm the managing member. So I've been the sponsor per se. And the other two guys are silent equity partners. They've been great to work with and, you know, they've been pretty pleased too. And I've been happy too, because, you know, when I first did this and I took, took somebody else's money to go off and invest in a real estate deal, you know, that's a different mentality. That's a different mindset. You know, that's something that, you know, in the beginning, I really kind of lost a little sleep over because, you know, the thought of, you know, investing in somebody else's money, but it's been a fantastic deal. You know, we hit the 1 year anniversary this past December, 2016. And, I'm pleased to say that I was able to do everything I said I would do plus a little more. And left the property really well capitalized. I didn't have to strip the property of, you know, all of its cash or anything like that to do what I said I would do. So that means a lot to me as well.
Now, were the investors people that you had already worked with or already knew, or did you have to go out and seek them?
One of them I had to go seek out. The other one I had an existing relationship with. So that one was pretty easy. But, you know, the other guy I had just met probably a month or two prior to this opportunity coming up. And, you know, he, I guess you could say he took a little bit of a chance with me. In fact, we were just talking about that in December, you know, and, we're both glad that, that we did this deal together because it's turned out to be a fantastic deal.
Neat.
Yeah.
So today or this year, what are you looking to do, for the most part? I know you've got the 64. Are you actively pursuing other properties? Are you just looking to stabilize the properties you have?
Well, it's funny that you ask that because, you know, I, my goals, my personal goals in 2017 are very much around family and health. You know, if I could do another, real estate deal on top of that, that'd just be icing on the cake, you know, but, yes, in the area of real estate, I am looking for my next deal. I'd look at anything 50 units or greater. If I ran across something here in Colorado, I'd absolutely do it. But it's a really, you know, hot market here right now, very much a seller's market. It's been difficult to find deals here. So I'm proactively looking in Texas. The thoughts crossed my mind, too, of maybe opening up one more market. I think if I went into any more than one more market, I'd probably have to clone myself, you know, but, you know, I'm open-minded to that as well, just because, you know, Texas is, become a really strong market as well. A lot of job growth there, and you know, incomes have been rising, and it's a great market. So, and a lot of institutional class investors too have discovered that, and they have a lot of money to place. You know, the REITs and the institutional investors and stuff like that. So, finding a deal inside of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is now becoming very difficult as well. So. And I'm not just looking for any deal. I always look for the deal, you know, and so, you know, I know what my acquisition criteria is and I stick to it. It's worked very well for me in the past. And so, you know, I guess it's kind of like a Warren Buffett type mentality, you know, when the right deal comes along, I know how to recognize it and I move on it pretty quickly. You know, in absence of a good deal, I'm not desperate for a deal.
Now, you have been real fortunate to be able to have your properties all, it sounds like, fairly close to where you live. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, the all of my properties in Colorado are in the Denver, you know, metro area. And then I have the 64-unit property. That's actually in Irving, Texas. So,
oh, okay. That's in Texas. Gotcha. All right. Good. So, now, do you manage the properties in Denver, or I would assume the one in Texas you have a property manager for, right?
Oh, boy. I have a property manager in both places.
Oh, great.
You know, property management is one of those things. Back in 2004, when I bought the duplex, I did go ahead and self-manage that property. I felt at the time, you know, it'd be a good experience to just – you know, experience it, and, you know, and that way, when I did bring on professional management, I'd be able to interface a little bit better with the property manager, know what, you know, having been in their shoes. I think the biggest takeaway for me, in that year process that I learned was that I don't ever want to do property management. So I've used third party professional management ever since, and I've never looked back. Well, I'll tell you what, when you find, you know, the right property manager, it makes all the difference in the world. It actually took me, it was on the second try that I found a fantastic property management company. But in Denver, and I've been extremely pleased with the management company that I've been using in Dallas as well. But it was in Denver that was that specific example that it took a second try, you know, for me to find the right property management company. But I'll tell you what, you know, I talked to a lot of people that consider property management. And, you know, I want to start this off by saying that, you know, I'm not knocking anybody that chooses to self-manage. I know some people that do that and they are extremely successful at it. That's not for me. I consider myself, you know, more of a yes man. I don't mind at all letting someone else be the no person, you know, to say no and enforce that lease. The other thing, you know, that I notice about people that are considering, you know, property management, the hump that they typically are trying to get over is that, you know, they feel nickel and dimed. You know, they don't like paying a management fee every month, you know, which is oftentimes a percentage of the gross income, you know, and things like that. They feel like they're giving up, you know, their profits or their cash flow when they pay a property management company. But what I've found in my experience is that when you find the right property manager, that property manager is actually going to save you money. And they're also, most importantly, going to save you the time and stress. And so that's been my experience. And, you know, I'd say too that if you're considering self-management and your motivation for self-managing is because you want to save money, I think that's a motivation that you might want to look inside yourself and take a closer look at, because I think that's the wrong motivation. Because like I said, when you find the right property manager, they're actually going to not cost you money. They're actually going to save you money and help you increase, run that property more efficiently than you ever could by yourself.
Well, it sounds like you have been relatively, you've been successful in terms of finding people. I mean, I myself have gone through a number of property managers and started off not quite as smooth as you did. I'd like to know how do you go about finding a property manager, and what do you look for? What are the sort of the key things that really help you to you know, sift through? I mean, this is, I would say, for those that, especially those that invest out of state, I mean, this is 90% of your success is, you know, getting the right property manager in place. You have the wrong person and your whole asset and investment can just go right down the tube. So I'd really like to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, when I screen property management companies, there's really four things that I look at. And I'll talk in more detail about each one of them, but let me just rattle off the four things. The first thing is local market knowledge. The second thing is how they do marketing and tenant screening. Third is I look at their services and their fee structure. That's obviously what it's going to cost us. Of course, their experience. That's the fourth thing. And as far as local market knowledge goes, you know, I oftentimes kind of quiz them. This is where when I'm interviewing them, I'm oftentimes trying to, quiz them and just test them, you know, ask them questions that maybe I know the answer to, you know, that I'm looking for them to tell me and demonstrate that they know the answers, like, you know, things about what the current state, what the state of the market is, you know, what the demographics are in an area, what the vacancy rates are. You know, also if they recognize any seasonality, you know, in the business. And by seasonality, I mean, you know, in fact, we experienced this in Denver. Typically, you know, December and the first part of January is usually a bad time to be leasing units. It's just a slow time with the holidays. So, you know, I want them to know about that seasonality and understand that. You know, and most importantly, and this is especially if you're in acquisition mode, if you're looking for properties, one of the things you can, you know, do with the property manager. In fact, I oftentimes encourage people to, if you're just building your portfolio, starting to build your portfolio, engage a property manager first. Find the right property manager first, because the truth is they can help you. They can direct you where to basically farm or hunt for properties. And so I ask them questions like, what types of properties get the highest rents? Is it condos, townhomes, single family homes, apartments? And what are the features or the amenities that result in the highest rents or the lowest occupancy rates, or excuse me, the lowest vacancy rates? Things like, should there be a washer and dryer inside the property? Does air conditioning or a fire, the presence of a fireplace in the unit or a garage, things like that. Those are marketable features. And marketable features are going to result in, lower vacancy. You're going to lease those places up faster. Those are the types of units that people seek out. But at the same time, they're also going to garner the highest rents. So these are the types of questions that I ask them as I'm quizzing them on their local market knowledge. On marketing and tenant screening, boy, this is really important to me because, oftentimes when it comes to property management, there's things you can control and then there's things that you cannot control. Things like, the market seasonality that I talked about earlier, that's something that you can't control. However, how quickly you make a property rent ready or turn a property, like let's say someone moves out and you move someone back in, you're going to have to go in and, clean the unit, maybe, do some minor repairs and things like that. How quickly a management company can turn those units, how quickly they get the marketing up, what their average marketing time is, things like that are things that I, am very curious, how they do that and what their average turnaround time is for some of those things. Because while no one's in your property, you're losing money. And then tenant screening is huge. This is something that is an absolute must with property managers. I want to know how they screen potential renters. I want to know if they do background checks. I want to know if they, confirm, do a credit check and make sure that there's no felonies on their criminal background, at a very minimum. I want them to verify income. When they say they have a job, I want them to actually call the employer and verify that. I even sometimes look at their standard lease agreement, because I want to know what their lease looks like, and whether or not it's just a weak little lease that you'd pick up at, Office Max or Office Depot, or if it's something that maybe they've fine-tuned with an attorney over the years, if it's more of an ironclad type lease. That's important to me as well. So the third thing was services and fee structure. These are things that you're just going to want to know and you're going to have to build into your operating numbers. You're going to want to know how much it costs to, do the monthly management, if they charge lease-up fees or marketing fees, and stuff like that. Do they bill back for utilities? Do they have a full-time maintenance staff that they leverage, or do they charge back for third-party contractors? Do they mark up third-party contractors? And then lastly was the experience. Might be things like how many, owners they've worked for, currently or in the past, and, even ask them for references, And here's the most important thing to me. I love property managers and real estate brokers for that fact. They're actually owners or investors as well. Because a property manager that has walked in your shoes as an investor really gets it. In my experience, I've found that, they're able to see things from your perspective as well, and that affects how they manage the property. So those are the four things that I really look for in a property manager.
God, that's great, great advice. I was even taking notes while you're doing that. Some of these are excellent. There's some excellent tips in there that I think our listeners are going to really benefit from. And if, by the way, those listening, if you're struggling or driving a car, trying to find a pen to write things down, don't worry about it. Everything that he's saying today will be outlined in detail in our show notes section on the olddogsreinetwork.com website. So don't worry, everything will be there, including any kind of links that he gives as well later on. So just so you know that. You've been investing since 2004 now, so you've been doing this for a while. What would you, kind of looking at, I like where we learn from our mistakes as well as our successes. And what would you say was your biggest mistake since you've been an investor?
I always love this question because usually when I'm done talking about this, I usually have to, you know, pick people up off the floor. you know, but this is this will blow your mind. So remember at the beginning I was talking about I had owned that property that I bought in 2004 for a year or two, and I had full intention of 1031 exchanging into something else.
Right.
Well, the reason that didn't materialize is because I had an event that I call my PhD in real estate. Boy, this was a huge learning experience for me. I had found a builder that had this really cool idea. They were building duplexes, and they'd build an entire community full of them, and then they would turn around and sell each individual duplex to investors. And they also had a property management division. They had a division that was a 1031 exchange intermediary. They also had another division that did non-owner occupied financing. It was a fantastic concept if the people involved only would have been honest. There were a number of people that were affected by fraud. I was obviously affected by this. Fortunately, I did not lose any more than I could afford to. But to make a long story short, I testified to the grand jury to help get the indictment. And I was also the second guy they put on the stand at the official trial. So now I don't want to scare anybody, right? Because there is a way that I could have prevented this. I honestly believe that if I had done better due diligence on the people involved in the beginning, I could have avoided all of this stuff. Trust but verify. You know, we've probably all heard that phrase before. And I think that that is so incredibly important. You know, anybody that is a sponsor, or, you know, that you're looking at possibly doing a real estate deal with, you know, any reputable, honest person is not going to have any problem if you ask them to run a background check on them, or anything like that, or provide references for people that they've worked with, you know, in the past. you know, so that is something that was a real big learning for me coming out of that experience. Again, I didn't lose any more than I could afford to, thank goodness. And there were people that were involved in that that had invested so much and lost so much. I'm so fortunate that I was not in that class of people, but it was definitely my PhD in real estate.
Wow. Wow. That's what a lesson.
I mean, yes.
That's the kind of thing we all hope we don't have to experience. But I think your point about doing the due diligence properly early on can prevent a lot of that kind of thing from happening. Not always. Sometimes, you know, this might be a new thing where there is no track record of things that they've done wrong, but still, I think your due diligence is going to weed out a lot of problems. How about conversely on your biggest success so far in your real estate investing business here?
Boy, I would say that was buying a 64-unit apartment complex. And the reason I put that in the category of biggest success is because, you know, one thing, I had a mentor, or I still have this mentor, that told me, you know, a while back, the bigger the deal, the easier it is. And I knew what he was trying to say at the time he told me that, but it wasn't until I bought the 64-unit apartment that I realized truly what he meant. The reality is that I spend the same amount of time renovating and repositioning a 64-unit apartment complex as I did the 12-unit apartment complex, or for that fact that I would spend doing a 150-unit apartment complex or a 200-unit. The only difference is that the bigger the deal, the budgets are larger, and at the same time, the pot of gold at the end of that rainbow is potentially larger as well. And so it really makes sense that the bigger the deal, the easier it is. And so, you know, the other thing is too that when you break into the larger apartment space, you know, lenders and stuff like that are a lot more sophisticated. You know, they want to see your track record. And they want to see that you've demonstrated an ability to operate, these types of properties and reposition them and successfully operate them. And so obviously everything that I had done up to that point, from the single family residences that I owned to the 12 unit apartment complex that I had bought, all of that had prepared me to take down that larger 64 unit deal. And I'll tell you, 64 units, it may seem large, but it's rather small in the grand scheme of things.
Well, that's great. And you got it in a great area. Oh, man, the Dallas metro area. I've been looking at that area for a while and love to find a deal like that. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
How about now, a lot of our folks listening are 50 plus in age, although there's a broad age span listening. But we really focus the show on those 50 plusers that are either approaching retirement or are already in retirement, that are just concerned about those retirement years and whether or not it's really going to, they're going to do it well and be able to do it the way that they have always wanted to. And
sure.
What advice would you give to these folks? Now, the difference here is that we're not young, folks like you that, have, 20-year plan ahead of us or something at least in that range. We're looking short term here, and our main focus is really, really cash flow. So what advice would you have for somebody starting out later in life that's interested in getting involved in real estate investing?
Boy, my advice would be, and I'll tell you what, I wouldn't just throw this out to the newbie investor. I'd throw this out to even the experienced investor that's out there. And that is, never stop learning. Learning leads to action, and action leads to success. I think just listening to this podcast is a demonstration that, someone is wanting to learn, right? And whether or not you're a newbie investor or someone that's experienced, there's something to be taken away by listening to all of these different experts that you host, Bill. And there's books and, lots of resources out there as well, but, ways to learn. But I think what's important, is what comes after that. And that is, learning has to lead to action. I talk to so many people that they never get started in real estate because they're intrigued by the concepts and the principles of real estate investing, but they never get started. And you know what? Something to keep in mind is that action doesn't always have to cost you money. Your next action could very well be just looking at property listings on the internet and then analyzing those as investment opportunities. Chances are, especially if you're looking at just, listings, without the help of a broker, just stuff that's on the internet and stuff like that, stuff that you pencil won't look good from an investment standpoint, but that's okay because you're going through the steps. You're starting to get familiar with the process of analyzing deals, and you're starting to ask questions. You're engaging with a property manager and starting to talk with a property manager. Maybe you start talking with lenders as a result of just analyzing deals, and you understand how taxes are calculated, property taxes and things like that, all in support of analyzing deals. But it hasn't cost you any money yet. And the thing is that when the right deal does come along, having gone through these steps in this process, you'll know exactly what a good deal looks like. And when you do see it, you'll be ready to jump on it. It's the learning that leads to action. And then it won't, unless you take action, you'll never realize success. So, it's really those three things in that order.
Great advice. Great advice, Mark. Wow. Well, you're looking ahead, and like we mentioned, us old dogs don't really have the long-term view, and some of us do. Who knows? You may live to be 100 years old by the time, medical science is changing so rapidly. At the same time, you've got obviously a plan here, and where exactly do you want your business to grow? Where would you like to see it be in 10, 20 years down the road?
Well, I'm a cash flow investor for sure. So, I tend to hold properties as opposed to flipping properties. But, you know, to quantify it exactly, I'd love to get to a point where, you know, I've got over $20,000 per month in cash flow. And, you know, anything over and above that, I think I'd have to, you know, seriously look at just retiring to a private island, but maybe an island, you know, maybe somewhere in Central America, the Caribbean, you know.
Sweet.
But yeah, so, you know, going forward, what my future business is going to look like, you know, is really what it looks like today, but just continuing to scale it out and doing larger and larger deals. Because again, the bigger the deal, the easier it is. And so, you know, I strive to just continue to do larger and larger deals, and with each deal that I do, I'm building my track record. I'm building more financial strength, and those are the things that, you know, will enable me to continue to move up the totem pole in terms of deal size.
Oh, that's great. Well, I could talk to you for a while here, Mark, but we got to kind of wrap it up now, and respect your time and let you be able to get off the phone here. And and so we have our little, what we call our wrap it up section, where I ask you a series of quick questions, and you respond with quick answers, and just a way of sort of tapping into your knowledge to get information about resources that our potential investors and actual investors can get involved with. So are you ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
I'd have to say one I just read recently is Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever, Volume 1 by Joe Fairless. And I know you just had Joe on as a guest recently.
I sure did.
You've had him on a couple times, actually.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. Joe, what I love about Joe's book is that it's not really so much Joe's opinion, you know, or success story. I mean, Joe's very successful, but what he's done is he's compiled these little case studies or vignettes, I would say, of, you know, people that have been very successful in real estate. And I think there's lots of ways to make money in real estate. And Joe's done a good job of just putting together a book full of vignettes about different ways to make money in real estate.
That's great. I haven't read it yet, and I have it on my list. It sounds wonderful. I love the idea. I just think of what mm-hmm. I learned here in the course of interviewing the people that I've interviewed, and the information. I mean, it is just, I mean, you couldn't get that in a university. It's just, you know, it's
right.
Real stuff, you know, where the rubber meets the road, where, you know, the people are actually doing these things. And so I think that'd be a great recommendation. How about your favorite business book?
Well, I'm actually going to say Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. I know that's a book that's slanted towards real estate, but I really consider that a general business book because, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks a lot about entrepreneurship and, you know, and he's there's other books that, you know, follow on that are sequels to this one too, where he talks just more broadly about entrepreneurship. In fact, they just released the 20th anniversary edition of that book, and that book is one that is still very, very relevant today. So I'd encourage people to check out Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Great recommendation. How about your most valuable website for success other than your own?
Oh, probably BiggerPockets.com. You know, Joshua Dorkin, you know, he started BiggerPockets because, you know, he didn't want... He was kind of frustrated with, you know, the coaches out there and stuff like that that were charging huge amounts of money to, you know, get coaching and, you know, attend conferences and stuff like that. So he created this amazing community of real estate investors. And, you know, I've surfed around on there a little bit. I've even participated in some of the forums and stuff like that. I just love that, you know, there's so many people out there that are willing to help others, you know, that are looking to get started and share their successes and things like that. So BiggerPockets.com is fantastic.
I did that in a big way. How about favorite app?
Favorite app is one called Property Evaluator. You can find it on realestatetools.com. And when I was buying residential stuff, this was my favorite app for analyzing deals. It's really easy to use on a iPhone or an iPad or even a desktop version that they have for analyzing real estate deals. So that's a great one.
Good. How about favorite quote?
Oh, I love this one. I never lose. I either win or I learn.
Oh, that's a great quote. That's a great quote.
Yeah.
All right. I like that. Okay. Our final question here. If you lost absolutely everything you had and everything you built up and you only had $1,000 in your bank account, how would you spend that money to relaunch your real estate investing business?
I would probably use that $1,000 to buy leads and do a mailer, you know, or an outreach campaign to reach leads for, you know, and basically go hunt. When I say leads, I'm referring to people that might be willing to sell their properties.
Gotcha.
You know, yeah, that's what I would do. You know, as far as, you know, the down payments and stuff like that, you know, especially if I know what I know, or if I knew what I know now, you know, I know that, you know, there'd be, you know, investors out there that are looking to be passive and things like that. And that wouldn't be the problem, I think. But to get started, I'd have to buy leads and do some kind of outcall campaign.
Gotcha. Well, we're almost wrapped up here. We thank you for the wrap it up sequence there. And I also understand you have something you wanted to give to our listeners, which is always great because, you know, they love free stuff. And so
absolutely.
What do you got for the old dog team here?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. And this is completely free. It's just a way of saying thank you for listening to me ramble for a little while.
I love it.
You know, there's lots of reasons why I made the transition from, you know, single family to multifamily or apartment complex investing. And one of the biggest reasons is what we call forced appreciation. You know, the way that commercial properties are valued is based on the income method. So, you know, if I acquire a property, my objectives are simple. I need to increase income and decrease expenses. And as I do that, I'm actually forcing the appreciation of my property. And I have a very predictable outcome in terms of my investment. I talk a little bit more about this in the paper, but I've written a paper called 10 Not So Obvious Ways to Boost Your Multifamily Property NOI. Whether or not you're new or you're an experienced investor, I share some things that I've learned along the way, creative ways to boost that net operating income, you know, on your property. And so to get that, just go to www.luxmana.com/old dog. So Luxmana is spelled luxmana.com/old dog. And dog is DAWG.
I love it. Oh, that's great. I'm signing up for that. That sounds like a great thing. Well, how can folks reach you? It sounds like probably through your website, but do you have a recommended way for folks that maybe want to get in touch with you, find out more about what you do, or maybe get involved with what you do? How would they do that?
Yeah, it'd definitely be just go to luxmana.com. From there, you can connect with me via LinkedIn. There's also links to my Bigger Pockets profile. You can connect with me that way as well. And if you really wanted to reach out directly, there's forms. You can just drop me a message from the website as well.
Great. Well, Mark, this has been a great podcast. Wonderful information that you shared with our listeners. And as you know, probably better than most, we always close out our show with our best old hound dog howl from our guest. And, you know, I don't want you to feel any pressure. Now, I know that, you know, this is one of those things a lot of people, you know, aren't real comfortable with, but, you know, we really don't care. We know, I'm just kidding. No, we just like to have fun. And, you know, real estate investing can be fun. And it's just another way to kind of, you know, round it out and get a little bit silly here too at the same time. So are you ready for your hound dog howl?
I sure am. And I've been looking forward to this, Bill, because, you know, I have a 5-year-old daughter and, you know, she watches that movie, Zootopia, and there's a scene in there where they start a howl. And so we've been practicing. So
she's going to do it with you?
I'm ready.
All right. Okay. All right. Go for it.
Oh, 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 oh!
Oh, man, that's great. That was a really good howl.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's great. You're going to make your daughter proud with that one. So when she hears it on the radio there, or whatever listening device you may happen to listen back to this. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Mark. And I hope everybody will visit his website and see what he's about. And I just want to thank all of you old dog listeners out there as well for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate that. And please note, as I mentioned earlier, that everything that we discussed here today will be in detail on our website under our show notes. And our show notes are located actually at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And there is where you'll find the episode. So thank you again, Mark, and thanks, listeners. That's our show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. And until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.